Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
State Treasurer David McRae has put hundreds of millions back into the hands of Mississippi citizens, expanding the state's affordable college and career savings program and also returning record amounts of unclaimed money. Check out how Treasurer David McRae's office can help you, your business, or your organization. Treasury.ms.gov.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in on this unfortunately recorded version of the podcast. My name is Michael Borky. I really appreciate you being here as always. As I told you guys, Hayden and I on Thursday are going to be on the coast for the radio show. I just won't get back in time to come back and fire up a live stream for you guys. So I didn't want to push it. And so I'm just recording something for you. But it's good stuff. And it's a conversation that you on this podcast feed anyway have not heard yet. And so I'm going to bring it to you right now. So my apologies again for not being live. But, you know, the radio show pays the bills after all. Hayden and I are going to be on the coast. Won't get back in time. It is what it is. But something I want to bring to you that I promised you I would. He and I had a conversation with Keith Carter this week. We talked about Pete Golding. We talked about how much money the college football playoff brings in, which you'd be surprised by his answer. The Tad Pad going down, the progressive on the field deal, and more. It's a really good conversation. I hope you guys enjoy it. That is coming your way here in just a couple of minutes. I want to invite you, though, first, please subscribe to the podcast wherever you get them. Just search Rebel Report, Spotify, Apple, wherever. Also, Amazon Music, also there. I learned the other day that it's on there as well. So search it out, subscribe, and if you like what you hear, leave a rating and a review. Also, right here on YouTube, subscribe, like, comment, all that good stuff. I would really appreciate that. And even these recorded editions of the show are brought to you by Scruggs Farm Lawn and Garden in Saltillo, Mississippi. 0% on your John Deere, from zero turns all the way up to compact and 5 Series tractors, 0% varying months, 0% financing through the month of August. And they've got everything you need. Farm for your hunting property and more. Your backyard, inside of your home, clothes, appliances, home improvement, everything that you need. And they are just like you. They're one of you. They will take care of you, especially if you tell them that I sent you. But they're great people there. It is an outstanding store, and they will do and take care of you. If they don't have it, they will literally get it for you. I've seen that happen. Customer walks in, cannot believe that this gigantic store didn't have it. Customer asked for it. They said, we don't have it, but we will order it for you. Boom, done. That's how accommodating they are at Scruggs. Outstanding people, outstanding prices, and in a great place. Go by and see them. Logan Smith Shelter Insurance for your auto, home, life, or business insurance needs. 601-823-3500. 601-823-3500. Logan Smith and Shelter for all of your auto, home, life, or insurance for your business. Priority One Bank, making you their priority every single day. Switch and bank with me at Priority One Bank. And Advantage Business Systems, absms.com. All right, here that conversation is right now, as promised. It was the radio show, obviously. Hey, Dad is there, but it's a great conversation. And I cut the you know, the intros and the outros out of it. So it's just the conversation without the pleasantries. And when the interview ends, the podcast will end. So if, you know, just when the conversation ends, boom, that is the end of the podcast. I appreciate you guys being here. We will be back live on Sunday as scheduled. Crazy week on the road, basically all week long for the radio show. But we'll be back locking in on Sunday. I will see you then. Enjoy your weekend. You guys have a good rest of your day, and I will talk to you then.
Last time we visited with you on this show in this spot, your football team was getting ready to play in the playoff. And everybody knows the story of what has happened since. They win 2 games, Pete Golding, everything that has come with it. What have you observed from the day you made him head coach to now that makes you confident that Pete Golding is the right guy for this job?
Yeah, you know, I think it's kind of layered. You know, I think, one, he just did a phenomenal job during that period. You know, one, just holding the team together, holding the staff together, you know, going through signing day, just a lot of things that he did, you know, in that kind of 4 to 6 week period, you know, through that playoff run, which was incredible. But I think, you know, that was all just kind of out of necessity. You know, it's like, we have to do this. We have to make this happen, and we'll kind of worry about, you know, the rest later from a coaching standpoint. But, you know, kind of from spring ball on, you know, just seeing the way he's managed the program, the way he put, you know, kind of the full staff together for the long term, the way he's interacted with the donors, the way he's, you know, made it a player's first team, you know, all those type of things. It's just been really fun to see. And, you know, I've said it before, it wasn't surprising at all, but it was just impressive, you know, and he's continued to do that. I was actually out of practice today and, you know, looking at the guys running around and all the talent that's out there on this team. So just excited for him and, you know, really excited for him now to have kind of his team. You know, not that that wasn't his team last year, but, you know, kind of his first full team, that, you know, with him being the head coach for the full season and all those things. But, you know, couldn't be more excited about him and the rest of the staff and obviously this team.
Yeah, the word we've been using a lot, and you saw it a good bit at Media Days, was comfort. He just feel, and I don't think that's surprising, knowing Pete Golding and what kind of coach he was and what kind of person he was before he became the head coach. But this is maybe one of the coaches in the SEC who's the most comfortable just being himself.
No question. No question. And you love that about him. What you see is what you get. And, you know, the thing about Pete is he's turned down head coaching job. Like, he's been ready to be a head coach. I mean, people have offered him jobs in the past, and, you know, he was just very comfortable in his role as defensive coordinator and loved being here in Oxford and those type of things. So, again, no doubt he's going to be really good at head coaching. And obviously, you know, first year, there's things we all learn in the first year and the second year and all those type of things. But very comfortable and, you know, just a great fit for us. You know, I think that that's a big part of it, too. Fit's always a huge thing.
Something you have to do a lot is deal with spreadsheets and dollars and cents. What does a playoff run into the semifinal do for your athletic department financially?
Well, you know, there's a lot of revenue associated with it, obviously, when you host the home game and you get the CFP stipend and all those things. But there's a lot of expense with it, too, you know, especially when you travel. You know, when we travel to New Orleans, obviously, we could, you know, do some things a little more efficiently and economically with it being only 5 hours away. But when you travel out to Arizona and you're putting, obviously, the team on a plane, the band on the plane, the cheerleaders on the plane, you know, all those things. We ended up making some money off of that run, but not as much as you would think at the end of the day. But, you know, the home game was great. We probably netted, you know, $3 or $4 million there. But when you travel, you're eating into that stipend pretty quickly. But, again, you know, that's all part of it. And, you know, again, it's not necessarily earth-shattering money, bottom line. But the goodwill and obviously the brand components of all that, obviously a huge thing.
Did you feel yourself validated while they, especially after the Sugar Bowl? You know, they beat Tulane, but they beat Tulane earlier in the season. They go to the Sugar Bowl and win. Did that validate you and your decision-making and process?
Well, one, I wasn't really looking for validation. You know, I mean, I think that we always are going to make the decisions that we think are best for the department. And, you know, obviously with everything that went on during that period, we felt like, you know, the first decision we made was the right one to, you know, to not let the previous coach in the playoff. And, you know, knowing that Pete was right there in our building and Pete was on our radar the entire time that we were basically, you know, having a coaching search in a parallel path with the season. You know, we knew Pete was ready. And, you know, yeah, sure, the success, you know, makes everything work out really well, and to win those games was awesome. But, you know, whether we had done that or not, I think the decision was the right one, and I think that will play out this year. You know, that'll play out in the future that you know, he's the right guy for our program.
There's so many stories right now in college sports that we're just like, I don't know if bad is the right word, but they're just, you just don't want to read them. And then there's Trinidad Chambliss, who's a great story. On 3 Sports yesterday, said he's the face of college football, which is an incredible 365-day journey from him, from where he was just a backup here at Ole Miss and nobody really knew who he was, to now he's one of the – he may be the best quarterback in college football. What kind of young man is that, and how kind of representative for Ole Miss is he?
Well, I've said that all along. I mean, everybody sees, you know, how spectacular he is on the field and the plays that he makes and those type of things. But where I'm so much more impressed with him is the type of person that he is, the guy he is in the locker room, the guy he is in the community, you know, the guy he is that when you're walking across campus, you know, always says hello, shakes your hand, says yes, sir, no, sir. Just a great young man, the type that you want in this position, the type that you want, one, for himself to get this publicity and, you know, all of these accolades, but two, for your institution. I mean, that's exactly the combination that you want. So, you know, I love that. And, you know, we got a lot of those on this team. You know, there's just a lot of good young men. And, you know, the locker room has a great culture. And, you know, excited about that. But he's certainly the leader of all that for sure.
There's a game coming up this season. Now, talked to Pete Golding earlier. He's all in on Louisville, but we don't have to be all in on Louisville. We can talk about anything. We asked Greg Sankey at Media Days about extra preparation for that game. What are you guys doing?
We're talking about the Charlotte game.
Yeah, the Charlotte. Week one.
That's the one I thought you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing a stadium renovation themselves.
Yeah.
The program on the rise.
The Niners.
But are you guys doing anything special? What's that look like to make sure that that game goes off without a hitch?
Yeah, you know, again, we certainly, you know, have to be ready for games one and games two, and we will be. But, you know, for us, from an administrative standpoint, a community standpoint, you know, it's going to be probably the biggest college football game maybe this entire year. We'll see how it all plays out. And at least from a hype standpoint, an eyeball standpoint, actual people in town standpoint. So, yeah, we're going to make sure that we're prepared. We've hosted other huge games and had big crowds. And, you know, the volume of people will be similar to some of those big games we played in the past. But, obviously, a lot surrounding the game and those type of things. So we'll be ready, you know, depending on what media outlets are in town and all of that, we'll be ready for that too. So, but, yeah, we'll try to treat it as another game, but knowing that, you know, maybe we need to pay a little more attention to, you know, some of the storylines along with that one.
So let's get away from football for just a minute. The Tatsmith Coliseum has gone away, and that's a place where you have a lot of your memories here at Ole Miss. Just for you, what were the emotions of that like?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, that building, we haven't used it now for about 10 years, which is hard to believe. You know, the other part of that is not only did I, you know, back then we only had one gym. So everybody practiced there, the men and the women, you know, not only played there, but practiced there. The volleyball team practiced there and played there. Now everybody has their own space, you know. But so, you know, tons of time there for me. But my daughter is a cheerleader here, and that's where they, you know, had their home turf and their locker rooms and all that stuff. So she spent the last 2 years in there as a cheerleader. So for the Carter family, we spent a lot of time in there and had a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. So, yeah, bittersweet, but certainly, you know, from a campus standpoint, a building that was becoming very hard to manage and a very expensive building to manage. So it's coming down, and it'll become a parking lot for a while. And the long-term plan is for that to become some really cool, you know, really cool space there, similar to the Circle over on the other side of campus. So, you know, got to have progress, obviously, but, yeah, bittersweet for sure for me.
You auctioning off the seats that still existed in there? What are you doing with those?
You know, we gave folks an opportunity for, you know, several months before the construction fence went up to kind of make arrangements to go in and get things and do different things. But since some of the pictures and the videos have come out over the past few days, I've gotten several calls about seats, and I'm like, hey, it's too late. Sorry, you know, we've turned it over to the demolition company. We did take the floor out, which was cool. We got that in storage right now. We're hoping to do some really cool things with that for former players, donors, those type of things. So hopefully we can get more information on that in the future.
I'll get one for you.
I know I'm a big guy, but that is the most uncomfortable seat I've ever sat in. Gosh, the Tatsmith Coliseum.
Tight in there for sure.
It was tight, just like this the whole game. Some good memories for me, but some bad ones too. And you were part of some of those bad ones. I have to give you credit for that. So,
speaking of being on the field, when official announcement today, Progressive going to be on the field. I did notice, by the way, the logos fit nicely on the field. You got some that really stand out, and it almost like it kind of fit with the aesthetic of the field. But what is that deal like? How does that get done? Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, obviously that became a thing a couple years ago, became legal to do, and you know, last year at the end of the season we had Aflac on the field for one game, kind of in just a one-off deal, and it's been something we've really been looking for the past couple of years, and, you know, finally found a great partner in Progressive. Learfield, our multimedia rights partner, helped with that relationship, and we were able to get that done. Us and Georgia, the only two schools in the SEC for that. So we're excited about that. Obviously, you know, financially it's very helpful. It's a three-year deal, which will be nice for us. You know, the jersey patch is the next thing. We're looking for that, and you've seen that. I think Tennessee maybe announced today for their men's and women's basketball team that they found one. But I think there's only three or four teams in the SEC that have jersey patches. So, but, you know, as we talked about, you know, the budgets and, you know, stretching dollars and finding new dollars, that's what it's all about now. And so, but to your point, like we wanted to find a partner that you know, made sense, that looked good on the field. It wasn't, you know, a gaudy logo out there and those type of things, because I've kind of joked before that we certainly want to find the revenue. We don't necessarily want to become NASCAR where you just got, you know, logos everywhere. Nothing against NASCAR. But I think we did well here, and the logo on the field looks really good.
Nothing Monster Energy.
Is that deal that with the Egg Bowl with Facebook? Is that a 2-year deal? Will that be for the Egg Bowl this year as well?
It will. Yeah, we'll still be able to do that. I believe that logo will be more at the 50-yard line.
Last year,
and
yeah.
So it was obviously there at State last year, and it'll be on our field this year.
Okay.
Next thing, the stadium project, the entertainment district. People have been hoping to see renderings. When is what's the timeline on that? When are people going to get to see, you know, what you guys are working on, and what's the update there?
Yeah, well, one, we're really excited about that project. We're in the process now with the preferred partner of getting through the contract stage and through the procurement stage and those type of things. Obviously, there's IHL approval. There's some steps that we still have to take. So I don't know that renderings and those type of things will be coming out anytime soon, but we are making a ton of progress on that. That project is full go. We just got to, you know, kind of get through some of the red tape and those type of things. But, you know, I think it's really going to transform, you know, that district there. And now with the pavilion and the North End Zone project, the new STEM building, the Lloyd Bell Tower, all of those things right there, you're kind of coming out of the Grove toward the stadium. It's going to be a really special space. So excited about that, and hopefully more to come.
I asked Zach Zellman the same question. The Save College Sports Act did not even come up for a vote. Even if it does, there are some people that think it won't pass regardless. Are you in the place now, like your colleague in Knoxville, where you want to move past Congress and start talking about collective bargaining? Where are you after seeing that whole process play out and it fail at the final hour?
Yeah, and I don't know that it's, you know, totally dead yet, but, you know, I've never thought that, you know, the federal government was going to be the one to save college athletics. You know, I do think we've got to get in a room, you know, with the ADs, with the commissioners, and figure out a solution for this. And, you know, there were some things in that bill that I thought were really good. There was tons of loopholes in that bill, you know that didn't really close up some of the things that we needed to kind of correct, you know, the things that we do. So I don't know. You know, I think we've been talking about collective bargaining behind closed doors for a long time. And, you know, I think that that's certainly an option. You know, I don't think it's nearly as clean as in the pros. Because we're not the pros. I mean, if it was just for college football, yeah, you could probably create that, you know, pretty not easily, but easier. But, you know, the rifle team and the soccer team and the, you know, the tennis team, you have to talk to those teams differently than you do football and maybe men's basketball and some of the revenue sports. So it's very complicated. You know, it's not an easy solution, but I do think if we could get the right people in the room and just decide that we're going to roll our sleeves up and spend a few weeks on this and get it fixed, I think we could do it. You know, I really do. But never really thought that, you know, maybe that federal intervention was the right path to go anyway. And even if the bill gets passed, I mean, do you really want the federal government, you know, in the ins and outs of your industry every day?
The thing that concerned me the most.
You want the federal government in the ins and outs of anything.
Of anything.
No doubt.
But when one of the writers of the bill was on Andy Staples' podcast and they asked him, you know, if this passes, who enforces it? He didn't know.
Yeah.
He didn't have an answer. And so we've been talking about that.
I zone out with it.
It affirmed me sometimes anyway, but it never felt like that was the best path forward, although that's easier said than done,
yeah.
Of course.
No doubt.
Now that you're sharing revenue and doing all of those things, you're having to find alternative revenue streams. We're hearing from fans, if we are, we know you are, about fatigue and being up against the end of their line financially. For a fan listening right now that has that feeling, what would you in the administrative position say to them?
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with them. I mean, we think and talk about this a lot internally, you know, as we talk about ticket prices and donation prices and those type of things. So, it's a tough balance because, you know, I think those same donors would also say we want rosters like we have this year. You know, we want rosters that have, you know, Heisman candidates and All-American candidates and those type of things. So, you know, finding that right balance is hard. And the current model, you know, just candidly isn't sustainable. I mean, you know, what we're doing, we're seeing these markets every portal cycle go up 50 and 60%, and it's not possible. I mean, if that happens in this football portal cycle, you're going to have an $80 million roster somewhere.
Jeez. And then you're going to start getting close to the NFL salary cap at that rate.
No doubt. And you know, that's where, you know, football at I mean, there's probably less than 5 to 10 programs in the country where football's profitable at that stage. I mean, even at Texas and Ohio State and some of those places, you start to butt up on, well, you know, now with the operational expenses and the roster expenses, you can't make enough revenue to even that out. So it's certainly not sustainable for, you know, a large group of P4 schools and the, you know, the top five or six. At some point, they're even going to say, hey, we can't keep this up. So that's where we as the administrators, we as the adults in the room have got to figure it out at some point if we're going to keep going.
So as I was saying earlier, there's these stories that frustrate fans. We talked to Jeremy McClain. We talked to Zach Selman. We asked them, what's going on at your university that excites you right now? What's the good news for your university? So what is it at Ole Miss? We already know about the football team. What else is going on here?
Well, I think just, you know, the one thing is that the brand is just stronger than it's ever been. You know, I've been traveling a little bit this summer, and if you wear the Ole Miss shirt, I mean, you're going to get a hottie totty no matter where you are. I mean, so I think that's really good. You look at the demographics of people that are coming in the freshman class. They're from all over the country. You know, I mean, it's a national brand, and, you know, I think that certainly, you know, we talk about it a lot. Athletics is not the most important thing in, you know, for the institution, but we are a lot of times the most visible. So we're proud of, you know, our role in that and what we've been able to do and get that logo out on national TV a lot throughout all of our sports. But Chancellor Boyce has done a tremendous job in his time at Ole Miss of really kind of rallying the troops. Everybody's pulling the rope in the same direction. And so we just got to keep that going. So there's a lot of positives. And, you know, I told our staff last week, we had a staff retreat. You know, we get kind of in this hole and start working through all the minutia of all of this stuff. But man, we're sold out this year. You know, there's a lot of great things happening in college athletics too. And you know, ultimately, we got 425 student athletes that are fantastic and awesome at what they do. So a lot of really good positives that sometimes I think get overlooked because of, you know, some of the other stuff that's going on.
This might be a better question for Chancellor Boyce, but you mentioned the volume of students from out of state, and there's just like this wave of northern students trying to come south to major universities. Do you guys at the athletic department talk about trying to get them to connect, like doing something special, kids from New York or California or wherever coming here that didn't grow up an Ole Miss fan or didn't grow up an SEC fan, to connect them to your department, or is that all from a university side?
No, we do, and I mean, I don't know that we necessarily target state by state, but we, you know, the freshman class coming in, we do tons of things with interaction with them and talking about all the things we have to offer in athletics. You know, I think what you find a lot is the parents become huge fans. They buy condos, and when the students leave, the parents stay. And so we're seeing a ton of that too. So we get engaged with them as far as selling season tickets, you know, premium areas and suites and those type of things. So we definitely have a handle on that. But yeah, it just continues to grow. Obviously, we love our in-state students as well. But man, it's just been awesome to see the growth, you know, across the board.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.